first you have to know, not fear, know that someday you're gonna die.
If you want to make a dark, smart, complicated, but very popular movie in Hollywood, David Fincher is the go-to guy. He made the serial killer movie Seven and Fight Club, and he got House of Cards made. He even managed to fill the Facebook movie, Social Network, with the damaged maleness in which he seems to specialize. His latest film, Gone Girl, is based on the best-selling Gillian Flynn novel about a man whose wife goes missing.
Beautiful wife, handsome husband.
Wife goes missing on her anniversary.
Nick Dunn, did you kill your wife?
We need to prepare your defense. And if we decide to go with your version of the truth.
David Fincher, welcome to Studio 360.
It's nice to be here.
You got interested as a little boy in making movies. Was there a single moment or a single movie or a single TV show or something you saw where you really thought, not I just like this or that was cool, but like, I want to do this?
Yeah. I was about 7 years old, and I was watching network television because that's all there was. And there was a documentary on the making of George Roy Hill's Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. And I just saw this making of, and it was the first time it ever occurred to me that movies weren't made in real time, that if you watched a movie that took 2 hours, that it was probably made in a couple afternoons. You know, if it was complicated, maybe it could take a week. But it never occurred to me that it took months and months and months. So I watched this, and I was just – you get to blow up full-size balsa wood trains. You get cowboys on horseback, and you get to hang out with Catherine Ross. This sounds like a pretty good job.
But it also – it's interesting because it was this adult idea of, ooh, this takes forever, and it's hard, which is attracted to you. Maybe you had the little adult in you.
Yeah. I mean, I've always been interested in how things work. You know, not watches, but I've always been interested in process and procedure. And, you know, my father could explain a lot of things about – I mean, he could explain persistence vision. He could explain animation and, you know, rostering cameras.
He was a writer for Life magazine and a science writer. So he was – that was a good dad for you to have.
Yeah.
Were you as a young person into crime stories and thrillers and psychos and stuff?
Well, I grew up in Marin County in San Francisco Bay Area during Zodiac, and I was one of those kids on the bus being followed by the California Highway Patrol. And I remember very distinctly going to ask my father, you know, my dad, who was always very, very dry, he turned in his chair, took off his glasses and said, oh, right, yes. Well, there is a serial killer currently at work in the area where we live, and he has threatened to shoot out the tires of a school bus with a high-powered rifle and pick off the kids as they come out of the school bus.
And how old were you when you got this news?
I was about seven.
Wow.
Six or seven.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, you know, you could drive us. Like, you're a stay-at-home dad. You're a journalist, for f***ing sake. So
people think of your movie Seven and Fight Club as super grisly.
Really? I've heard this said. I've overheard people saying this.
One of your tricks as a director, almost
I only
like,
have four, so let's
really?
Let, yeah, let's
as a sort of it's well, it strikes me as a kind of magician's idea to make them feel the violence and not necessarily show it. There's the famous example. I want to play the clip from the last scene of Seven. And for the people who have not seen Seven, spoiler alert, pause. Okay, the detective, played by Morgan Freeman, opens a cardboard box and tries to warn his partner, played by Brad Pitt, to stay away.
California, stay away from here. Stay away from here now. Don't come in here. Whatever you hear, stay away. John Doe has the upper hand. Mills!
Here he comes.
So everybody remembers that scene as horrific, but you never actually show the horrific thing, which is to say Brad Pitt's wife's severed head in this box, even though people think they saw it after they watched that movie. Is that a sort of narrative sleight of hand thing that you like doing to just – rather than just saying, here, show it to them?
The construction of that movie, which was decided upon and delineated by Andrew Walker, who wrote the script, was really kind of brilliant in that it didn't require you to actually see anybody strapped to a chair having horrible things done to them. You saw the aftermath. The movie is challenging your ability to empathize with something that you can imagine must have happened. They inspire as opposed to confirm your worst fears. But I think that the genius of Seven is it taps into a part of you that for me was the most frightening thing about serial killers. We live in a world where we can't get the guy who lives through the paper-thin walls to turn down Jeopardy, you know, and yet we have no idea that just beyond him somebody's running power tools in the middle of the night and there's, you know, a 50-gallon drum filled with, you know, body parts. So this is happening amongst us. The monster lives amongst us. And getting back to your original point, which is we have to open a box and there has to be this horrifying revelation. And we had Morgan Freeman. So I didn't feel any need to have to cast a rubber head and fill the box full of gristle.
You didn't even shoot it?
Never.
And then in terms of preying upon people's grisly imaginations versus showing it, in Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, it requires some pretty grisly, explicit, graphic, sexual violence, killing, all the rest. Was that hard for you to do, being more a master of the...
I still feel that there's... I mean, the violence that you do see in Dragon Tattoo, let's just say this, nothing's left to the imagination. But nothing is explicitly shown because we would have had to cut it out of the movie. It's an R-rated movie. So it's that, you know, it's that thing of... what is it? You know, Monty Python, he's cruel but fair. You know, I kind of like... It's like, yes, it's completely lascivious and merciless and tastefully done.
With both Gone Girl and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, you have adapted these enormous
girl novels.
Well,
novels among other girl things, in the title.
Girl in the title and enormous bestsellers. Gone Girl has 6 million some copies sold worldwide, about 4 million of those in the United States alone. You have the problem that people who make Harry Potter movies have of fans saying, oh, is he going to mess it up? Is it? But you also have, with this particular novel, the problem of these a suspenseful mystery based on these particular late-in-the-game twists that people who've read the novel know. Does that worry you? Did that worry you?
Well, look, if 6 million people have read the book and all of them get a plus one to go see the movie – and that's all the money that we make, we're going to lose $50 million. So I don't think it's that you don't make a movie. You can't make a movie
right.
for the people who read the book. But I try not to sweat that stuff
yeah.
because there's always – everybody has an opinion, you know, and very few people have to take responsibility for the $50 million that it takes to get the movie made. So you take the responsibility, but if you're going to listen to everyone, you'd never get anything done.
You can't worry about it all.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to I mean, I don't live in a hermetically sealed world, but I try.
I want to play a clip from Gone Girl. This is early on at a party where Nick, played by Ben Affleck, meets his future wife, Amy, played by Rosamund Pike.
Amy, who are you?
A, I'm an award-winning scrimshander. B, I'm a moderately influential warlord. C, I write personality quizzes for magazines.
Okay. Well, your hands are far too delicate for real scrimshaw work. And I happen to be a charter subscriber to Middling Warlord Weekly, so I recognize you. I'm going to go with C.
And you? Who are you?
I'm the guy to save you from all this awesomeness.
And they get married, and then a few years later, when things aren't going so well between them, she disappears. Over the course of the movie, we start to realize that she is more complicated than she seemed at the start. I wonder why you chose Rosamund Pike in particular to play this difficult role.
Well, in my head was this sort of statuesque. I mean, you know, Ben is 6'4", and so you can't have somebody who's 4'11" next to somebody. It's just, you end up like building up the sidewalks in order to put them in the same frame.
Or hiring Tom Cruise to replace Ben Affleck, I guess.
But it occurred to me that I had seen her in four movies and that I didn't really have a hit on her. I didn't really have a take. I'm somebody who, I mean, all I do all day is watch actors lie to me. So, you know, if that's what you do for, you know, 14 hours a day is watch TV and assess, yeah, it's believable. That's not believable enough. We need to do another one. I'm pretty confident in being able to say that I can see your utility belt. I can see your toolkit. I can see how many arrows you have in your quiver. I am one of those people who kind of, I get a take on people pretty rapidly, and I had no take on her. And I thought, that's really actually an important thing for Amy. Amy has to be one of those people that you kind of, she's opaque in a way. And the other thing was, I met her. She flew out to St. Louis. After it was about 2 hours into dinner, I turned to her and I said, are you an only child? And she said, yeah, as a matter of fact. And she told me about her whole upbringing. And it suddenly occurred to me, she's an orchid. She's a hothouse flower. She's been around adults her whole life. And she just is different. So once we got past the how physically dedicated will you be to this, she had these other things going for her that I just thought, I think she'll be great.
In the novel, Nick comes across as much more of a jerk than he does in the movie. Did you and Gillian Flynn feel you had to make him more likable as sort of the hero?
I don't think that there's anything in my past work that would suggest that I'm uncomfortable with the idea of
I know.
Characters who are unlikable. The book is very much two subjective points of view. Warring.
The husband, the wife doing their first-person thing.
Yeah. He said, she said. So it's kind of like who are you gonna side with?
And it's a very literary stunt.
It's a totally literary conceit. And if somebody comes in and tries to do a two-handed Rashomon, we're going to have a problem with this movie because there's no sort of entry point for the audience.
Yeah.
And Gillian, she got that. As the person who engineered it, when she did her first pass of the screenplay, she threw out the subjectivity of the he said. And instead of having Nick tell you his side of the story, you have to witness him dealing with information as it is uncovered about the disappearance of his wife.
Yeah. Do you wish you could write? You don't write your movies.
Do I wish I could write?
Yeah.
No, I don't wish that on anyone. No, I live with a writer. I have no interest in that. Aside from what they will tell you, I'm actually kind of a social person.
Those people that you
keep talking about. I don't like the idea of like going into a room and saying five pages today, come hell or high water. That to me is that's terrifying. I mean, my job is watercolors from three blocks away with 90 people holding the brush through binoculars.
And that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah.
Are there directors whose work you look at and say, that work and that career, if I could have something like that, that's my model?
No. I think no. So when I look back at George Roy Hill's work, you know, who's an important filmmaker for me, or Alfred Hitchcock's work, Steven Spielberg's or Roman Polanski's or George Lucas's, or, you know, Michael Ritchie's, you know, there are people whose work was at a moment in time, you just went, wow, you know, Bad News Bears, where did this come from? This is insane. Or the Alien, you know, you look at these movies and they impart something to you at that moment in time. But all of these people who have come before to do this weird job, you know, sort of herding cats. You know, there's always going to be some of their work that you just, you know, you can't believe how perfectly it worked out for them. And if you were to corral them at the end of a bar at some night and really pick their brains, they would probably go, "Oh, really? You like that?" You know, it's a very different thing watching someone else's work than it is understanding
your own.
Yeah. What it is to do it. You know, Martin Scorsese once said to me something that was really interesting because we were talking about style. He said, remember, the things that you do badly are as much a part of your style as the things that you do well. Because if everybody did it the way they wanted to do it, straight out of the gate, you know, every movie would look like Citizen Kane.
It sounds like, though, you probably have this is the thing I'm proudest of that I've ever done. Do you have that?
Nope.
That's like, you can't decide between among the children?
Like, yeah, exactly. This is the child you're most proud of? Yeah. No.
But the movie won't care, unlike your daughter or something.
No, it's given the chance, 90% of anything I've ever shot, if I was given the chance, I would redo it. Now I know what it is. When you string a movie together, when you finally see it, you know, beginning to end, that's the only time you're, you know, really, really qualified to talk about it. You know, you were shooting out of the United States, out of continuity, trying to work one actor, get all of their scenes done in 13 days so they can go off to do their play. You know, there's all these extenuating circumstances that turn this Rubik's Cube into a really difficult proposition. And so it's only, you know, we joke all the time in the movie business, but it's only when you've finished the movie that you're really qualified to be able to tell anybody how to make it, because that's where you finally go, that's where the weight should be. This, we should have 3 days for instead of twos. That's when it becomes clear.
David Fincher, we could go on all day, but thank you very much.
Sure, no problem.
David Fincher's latest film, Gone Girl, just opened everywhere. And if you're a David Fincher fan and want some more, the two of us had a terrific conversation that lasted the better part of an hour. You can hear the whole thing online at studio360.org.